You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Jeff Roers. Jeff serves as Chief Marketing Officer for Yext, the digital knowledge management platform that gives companies control over their customer-critical facts across today's ever-expanding universe of intelligent services. Jeff co-authored The Everywhere Brand, and his first book, Audience, Marketing in the Age of Subscribers, Fans, and Followers, has been lauded by marketers and executives alike as a must-read. Prior to joining Yext, Jeff served as Vice President of Marketing Insights for Salesforce and ExactTarget. Jeff, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
So we have known each other for a while from the kind of following through your bio there from the ExactTarget and Salesforce days. And, you know, when you first joined Yext, I remember thinking, what's that? And now I feel like I see Yext in the headlines in the marketing industry constantly. So for those that don't know and are unfamiliar, what would you say is, at the end of the day, if you're in a, what's the elevator pitch for Yext?
Sure. So we believe that consumers deserve perfect information about businesses everywhere. We can probably agree that that's a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get that, we believe that companies should be in control of the digital knowledge, the objective facts about their locations, their people, their menus, their products, their events across the digital ecosystem. And that includes not only your own website and app, but the third-party intelligent services that consumers now use for discovery, for navigation, for engagement. And so we are a digital knowledge management platform that companies use to control all of those facts and then publish them out to those third-party intelligence services and their own website, in addition to managing their brand reputation through both the kind of the monitoring of reviews, responsive reviews, and first-party generation of reviews. So it is really that iceberg under the surface. As brand marketers, we often first and foremost go to our website. But the trend has been that in the era of mobility and voice assistants and AI, the lion's share of your brand interactions are actually happening off your website. And so we really have shifted that paradigm or prioritizing that to ensure that you have great customer experience and engagement and discoverability everywhere.
You know, I love the visual of the iceberg under the surface because I think that that's probably how many think about it, about what we can directly see and easily control versus the proliferation of everything else. And as I say this aloud, I see that, you know, your book is titled The Everywhere Brand, and I think that's something that, you know, you have to get the smelling salts out a little bit and realize that we all are now.
Yeah, that's actually an ebook that Jay Baer and I co-authored a little over a year and a half ago. And it was a bit of divine inspiration. Jay and I were just on a call talking about what Yext's mission was. And just kind of spontaneously, I said, I think what we really need to craft here is something maybe along the lines of the Everywhere brand. And then Jay and I just started to riff, and we came up with seven tenets of the Everywhere brand, that you're customer-centric. You are granular in terms of, you know, really walking in the shoes of the customer to understand that, you know, it's great to have wonderful content marketing, but at the end of the day, a consumer's on their mobile device and they're hungry for lunch, and most people make a decision within 5 minutes of going to pick a place for lunch. You'd better be in the results that they see, whether it's a map, whether it's a search engine, whether it's an app, whether it's a social network.
Right.
And then, you know, the other tenets go around real time and being innovative and being active, because you need to actively manage this digital knowledge. You know, we all grew up with the internet, and we grew up with the paradigm that you put content and you put information and you put these facts on your website, and then this third party search engine creates this bot, this spider that comes and indexes it and pulls it back into a black box algorithm that you hope you can reverse engineer to become one of those 10 blue links and preferably 1, 2, or 3 to get results. That's an old search mindset. The new discovery mindset is, wait a second, consumers are looking for facts, and they're looking them on things like Google Maps. They're looking for them in things like Amazon Alexa or Siri or in Uber or in you know, different social places. And those aren't necessarily things you can always optimize for. It's not a search engine optimization. It's a direct injection of facts. And that's what Yext really pioneered, was that platform through API integrations that directly is publishing information. And we really believe in that paradigm shift. We don't think the website goes away, but we think the website now plays a different role. Most brand marketers, if they look at their website traffic, it probably has gone down over time. Mm-hmm. And if you're seeing growth, and if you're like our customers, you see growth in your local pages. If you're creating them and really curating local experience pages that are providing that consumer really granular information about whatever the location or menu or other information that's closest to them, because that's what's relevant. It's exactly why Google now just assumes if you're on a mobile device, you want a near me search result. You don't have to type in near me. They're going to give you things in proximity to you.
Right, right. Well, I think that's interesting too. You talk about the changing role of the website, and I think that so often that role has really evolved. I think, you know, the first hurdle was people understanding that the website still had a role in the age of social media. But then as we look at that entire digital ecosystem, the other part of the iceberg, what is most important to do on this home-based platform that you can control, and how can you deliver an experience that is still important, that's still answering a need that people have?
You know, that is and will continue to be the question about the website. And it should be one that you fire test your team and your brand about, because it will continue to evolve. The website and its purpose today is different than it was 5-10 years ago. And if you are a business with physical locations or with professionals who are meeting with consumers, you really need to be taking a look at that local aspect for visibility. We have a customer in the food service restaurant space, and their whole philosophy is, we got to drive people to the homepage. And they were doing this for years and years and years. And the problem was, they were launching online ordering. And what we were able to convince them of is, look, we're going to build out local pages for you. And those are going to be curated to the information that is at that local level. And you need to be putting that order online button at every one of those page levels. Within just a matter of weeks, it became apparent they had just eliminated the key point of friction that they were having. Because not only did their online orders shoot up about 30%, they began to look at their web traffic, and now their local pages far, far outweigh the homepage in terms of traffic. And it's a mentality shift for us as marketers, because we all love our brands and we all want to curate this, you know, this wonderful customer journey, and we want you to see our whole brand and we want you to understand everything about us. The case and point, though, is consumers understand your brand from a variety of different media. And if they have a moment that matters where they have to take action, you want to deliver them to the page or the service that can serve that quickest to reduce friction and increase the likelihood of conversion.
Yeah, it's just it's something difficult that when you lay it all out like that, it's not an easy box to check on on anyone's to-do list. So definitely in need of tools to help us get our arms around that a little bit more.
Absolutely, and it's, you know, it's influenced our product development certainly as well. I mean, we've been building Pages is a product of ours, Listings is a product of ours, Reviews and Events. But on the Pages side, you know, we run into, you know, prospects who they've spent a lot of money. Maybe they're using a big content management system, and they've got these local pages, but they're not schema.org compliant. They aren't able to be updated, through Yext because there's nothing to update. So we looked at that and we created something called knowledge tags, and it's the ability to drop in the tags of knowledge, essentially the little facts, so that you can use our platform to update those pages, even though we didn't build them, we didn't curate them, just as easily as you would the third-party universe of intelligent services. And it was acknowledging that, look, there's a lot of investment here. There's a lot of both sweat equity and real equity spent on content management systems. We have to come up with solutions that are going to make it easier for our customers to eliminate that friction for their customers. And so knowledge tags is one of the ways we do that. And we're always looking for ways that, hey, this digital knowledge, once you've created the source of truth on the Yext platform, you know, there are a lot of ways that can be used. Mm-hmm. And we've just been talking about the external ways. We also have an app directory to use it internally, because once you have these facts together, you know, I remember my good friend and now retired Joel Book, who was a legend at Exact Target, a real educator. You know, I remember when we first came out with, you know, the notion that, look, you want to customize emails and you want to have the unique information about, let's say, your insurance agent, because I'm not just represented by this insurance agency, I'm represented by this agent. So you want to have that in the email. And so I would get a different email than you would because your insurance agent is different. Well, back in the day, that was all very manual. You would be pulling spreadsheets. You'd be then pulling it into Exact Target. You'd be, you know, amassing all of this stuff. Well, it's interesting because Yext is an output source for that now. So, you know, we have integration with different ESPs because that knowledge is now assembled. In a place that it can be output, and these different systems then can just leverage it. So, you know, it's important for us, and this is true of any SaaS platform, they're always looking for additional points of value. And that's one of them is, you know, these granular facts are actually pretty darn important. And you think of something like, you know, as we're taping, we're on the tail end of the impact of Hurricane Florence. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of customers that were able to just go into Yext, show and turn off that their locations were open, and also point people to locations that were open. That's important for first responders, whether they need to get to the bank, they need to get something to eat, something like that. So it's a really interesting time because so much of what our brand is being driven by experiences we don't totally control. But what we can control are the facts, the accuracy of the real-time facts that consumers need to do business with us.
That is a lot to process and to think about too. And again, all of the different ways of diving in. One thing I want to come back to that you mentioned previously, but seems like one of those other things that marketers, brand builders might not be as ready for as they should be. You talked about all the different places that this information is, and you talked about it's in Alexa, it's in Siri. You talk a lot about kind of this voice-first world that we find ourselves in. How can brands be ready for what that means? I feel like we see the use data and we say, wow, people are using that more, but we haven't really connected the dots on what that means for our brands.
Sure. I think the first thing to recognize is that when you talk about voice, you need to separate voice commands from voice search or discovery. Voice assistants, whether it is on our smartphones or it is on our smart speakers, are being used for an awful lot of voice commands. Alexa, set a timer. Alexa, turn that off. Siri, what's my calendar for today? There are these things that are more about the functionality of life. Then there is the layer that is, let's say, e-commerce driven, right? It's principally driven by Amazon, Alexa, and all of their Echo devices. I just was at an e-marketer event yesterday about how Amazon changes everything. And I think they are either just under or just over 50% ownership of the voice assistant market. And they're obviously, they're trying to get you engaged and they're trying to get you purchasing because their legacy and principal focus has been as an e-commerce source. Then you have this third piece, which is the voice search and discovery. And you almost can pull that apart into the answering of questions versus the offering of suggestions. So the answering of questions would be something very specific, like, what's the best pizza place near me? And that voice assistant, depending on its sophistication, and the database that it's leveraging and the algorithm it has, is going to either give you an answer, a single answer, or it's going to give you a link if you're on a device that isn't just voice but also has a screen. It's going to give you, oh, you might want to look at these options. Well, what you'll hear from kind of all the folks pontificating about voice is, oh, there's only one search result. Well, there's truth in that. But the fact is that this mentality that we can optimize to be result number one has already been debunked. Mm-hmm. SEO has been working on it for years and years and years, and it's never a one and done. You may end up being number one, but there are an awful lot of things where the number one answer is Wikipedia, yeah. Even though you'd love it to be your brand.
Right.
So our philosophy is that the idea of voice search optimization is kind of a fallacy. And instead, what you need to be looking at, again, and I'm going to sound like a broken record, but you need to be looking at the facts. Because what you want in a voice world is you want to be the source of truth for questions that are objective facts asked about your business. And that is a foundational layer that really future-proofs you. So case in point, we have had integrations with the Google ecosystem, Microsoft ecosystem, and Apple ecosystem for years, which means our customers' data, their digital knowledge, is in Google Assistant. It is in Cortana. It is in Siri. Well, 2 months ago, we announced the first ever integration with Amazon Alexa. And so our customers, without having to lift a finger, now find their address and store hour information and phone number information being served to Alexa, so Alexa can serve that out as answers. We can't dictate when and where Alexa is going to serve that any more than we can dictate when a customer is going to ask a question. But it creates that foundational layer of trusted information from the best source. And so when you wrap this all together and you think about voice, I encourage brands to think about facts first. And then it's going to evolve because the way consumers are using voice today isn't going to be the way necessarily they use it in the future. And it's also going to vary greatly by age group. So, and also, you know, probably industry and just kind of whether you're a technological laggard or you're a technological early adopter. And the story I'll use is I heard within a week of each other stories from two friends. One was about their child and one was about their own experience. And the child was very upset that the speakerphone in this colleague's office would not answer questions. And this child told them it was broken because her assumption is everything is an Alexa or a Google Assistant or a Siri if it's that type of speaker device. The other story was another friend who was on a business trip and walked into the hotel room and said, "Alexa, turn on the lights." There's no Alexa in that hotel room. This person uses that functionality in their own home and is so conditioned, they just assumed the rest of the world was like that.
Right.
So you see that generationally and from technological early adopters, you see these high level kind of applications. As that continues to evolve, brands can begin to understand how to take advantage of that. But ultimately, you are at the mercy of the service itself to determine when you're going to be the result. And so another piece of this, not to prolong the answer, it's long-winded, but the other piece I would say is voice isn't always the right UI. We forget voice is a UI. It's a user interface. It is a point of me giving information to get answers and content back. I don't like voice in most instances, personally, when I'm asking specific things, or I know I don't want a result set of one. I want a result set of many things so I can kind of sift and decide. So I'm going to see Paul Simon with my son at Madison Square Garden tonight. We want to go to dinner beforehand. That's not a voice search for me. That's going on OpenTable, right, or going on Yelp,
yeah,
or kind of service, even Google Maps. I use Google Maps a lot for that. I just put in, you know, restaurant in this area and sift through it that way. So we have to remember it's a user interface, and there are also other user interfaces coming that we don't talk a lot about. They're already here. One of them is the camera in your phone. Google Lens allows me to hold that up in the real world and see real information about the businesses around me. Yelp has actually had this for 9 years. They have something called Monocle, where you can hold it up and look around you and see links to the Yelp reviews of the restaurants around you. So, you know, we just need to keep it in mind. And this has been true for every major new thing that's added into the marketing stack. I remember, you know, we had this conversation about social. I wrote a piece debunking the notion that Twitter was going to replace email. That sounds ludicrous now that we're like 10 years on the other side of that conversation.
Right.
But there were people legitimately arguing that. Now, I believe they were high on something at the time. And, I think I've been proven right. It's a different channel with different purposes. So right. Too, voice.
Yeah. Boy, that's interesting. And a good way of thinking about it and breaking it down too. I also, in thinking about all of this, I know that that we're getting up there time-wise, but I want to make sure that we at least touch on AI and AR. It seems like we're at a segue point where when you take into account all of these different factors, all of the new UIs potentially that brands have as interaction points, what does that look like when you factor in additional AI and augmented reality?
Well, a couple of things. I've already touched a little bit on augmented reality with, you know, Google Lens,
right, and Monocle.
With Yelp Monocle, right? Yeah. So right now it's mainly coming through your smartphone, but we are fast approaching an era where it's going to be very Terminator-like.
And it's going to be good. That's a reference.
Yeah, it's going to be in your glasses, or it's going to be in a contact lens, or some sort of supporting peripheral. You know, Google Glass was an early vision of that. I think Google gets unfairly chastised for a quote unquote failure. But as somebody who went through the process of buying one and getting, you know, trained on it and had that whole experience, it was their effort to see what were the limits of that technology? What were the frustrations of that technology? And should they invest more in that area at that point in time? And I think it proved out they shouldn't, and they focused more on, you know, Lens should be built into the app, right? And in fact, in Google Photos, Lens is in there. So any of your photos, you can click on Lens, and it'll tell you what's in the photo. I took a photo of my laptop on a website for a German customer of ours, Lidl. Big grocery store chain. It knew that was an Apple MacBook Air. It knew that was Lidl, the grocery store chain from Germany. You take a picture of a butterfly, it knows it's a Mariposa or whatever, you know, Dora the Explorer butterfly is going on around you. So the AR piece of this, again, it is a UI. and it is about delivering information that is relevant to you. So again, you've future-proofed your business if you've put together your digital knowledge in a platform, because you're now feeding it out to the places that matter. And as those ecosystems expand, they take that data with them. Now, the AI piece is cooked into everything we've been talking about. Reuters recently came out with a stat that about 85% of U.S. consumers are regularly using services that have AI in it, whether they know it or not. If you use Uber, you're using AI. If you're using Google, you're using AI. If you're using an iOS, you're using AI. It's just a question of gradation. We have to remember AI is not something that is monolithic. It's artificial intelligence. It's a question of how deep is that intelligence. So you could have a very singular type of intelligence, like in, you know, 97 when Big Blue beat Garry Kasparov. That was a very narrow form of AI that just was trained to play chess. And chess is a complex game, but it's nowhere near as complex as Go, which, you know, just a couple of years ago, Google in the UK built an AI that beat the world Go champion. And that blew people away. There's a really good documentary, in fact, on, I think it's on Netflix right now, about Go and how that game, you know, is a cultural phenomenon. And it's interesting because it was all filmed before Google beat the champion. And everybody's talking about, oh, yeah, it'll take years and years and years for AI to be able to play this game because it's so complex and there's so many, you know, variations and everything else. And it surprised people. And in fact, the AI played so differently than a human, it's influenced how humans are now playing the game. So you have these gradations. Then you have the bigger gradation of AI, which is like, you know, the C-3PO. It's got human emotions. It can help you. It can translate. It knows every language. And then you can get into the dystopian view, which be like the latest Alien films with Fassbender's character, right, who is AI cybernetic organism who you know, turns on them. So you have these major gradations. What matters to brands, though, is just to unpack artificial intelligence, right? Artificial means that there is some sort of computerized system. Intelligence is effectively the collection and use of knowledge. And then if you unpack knowledge, knowledge is the understanding of facts. And so our whole principle at Yext is, we're a platform for objective facts. So that feeds artificial intelligence, because you can't have intelligence unless you have accurate facts. Otherwise, you have ignorance. It's artificial ignorance. And if you, again, look at the paradigm that we've been working under, when Google first came out, it was solving for the problem of accuracy and amassing the world's knowledge through indexing. And it would always have to arbitrate between different sources of information that conflicted. Well, this aggregated source says the store hours are this. This website says the store hours are this. This governmental site says the store hours are this. Well, this user, like user-generated content, says they're this. And they're four different things. Well, once you move to a world where the business is in charge of it and they're trained to actively manage that, being an everywhere brand, now that intelligence service can rely on that as the best source and supplement only in the absence of information with other best sources. And so when we think artificial intelligence, again, it comes back much like the voice discussion. We've got to get the facts about our business right and our brand. And, you know, we call it digital knowledge management. We've also seen it referred to as brand data management. But we do believe this is a brand new category for brand marketers, digital marketers, and it is going to take a new type of person, a digital knowledge manager, to be the one that really corrals this information and creates the cross-collaborative team in enterprise organizations to really do this. In smaller organizations, it's a smaller group of people, but it's the same idea.
All of this critical in, I love that you brought it back full circle to being an everywhere brand as we have to today. Jeff, shifting gears just slightly, is there a brand that has made you smile recently?
There are a few of them. I mean, the obvious answer this fall would be Nike for their 30-year anniversary of the Just Do It campaign. And and sticking with Colin Kaepernick. That I thought was extremely impressive, very true to their brand, gutsy in the face of a lot of misinformation and misunderstanding about what he and what he has been doing is really about. You know, if you dig into that story, he actually consulted with a veteran about how he can appropriately protest. And mm-hmm. the veteran was the one who counseled him, you know, kneeling would be appropriate. So setting aside the politics, I think that that's just gutsy because, you know, it is hard in our culture to stand up to the wave of outrage that happens because of social media and polarization. So I thought that was one that brought a smile to my face and certainly had me, commending the marketers behind that. I always have a smile brought to my face by my friends over at Donors Choose. Katie Bismy, the CMO over there, is a great person, and their whole mission of, you know, helping teachers who are underfunded get funds for the critical classroom materials or projects or things that are really going to help students learn and get that privately funded. But why they bring the smile to my face is I just got an email from them this week, which was the letter from the last project I funded, the teacher. And they close the loop. So you will get, you know, sometimes drawings, sometimes letters from the kids and sometimes letters from the teachers that let you know this is what your donation allowed me to do. And Donors Choose is so good at that in a time when a lot of nonprofits don't close that loop.
Yeah.
And don't let you see ultimately how you made a difference. So that certainly brought a smile to my face. And we are taping this the day after the Cleveland Browns won their first game in some godforsaken number of days, beating the New York Jets. I am pleased to announce I both predicted that during a sales training that I gave yesterday and predicted that Baker Mayfield would play in the game. Because if you are a Browns fan, you know that our starting quarterbacks just get injured. And so while I am not a beer drinker, I am a teetotaling Diet Coke addict. it brought a smile to my face that the Bud Light fridges were unlocked automatically with that win last night.
That is awesome. From the Cleveland Browns to Donors Choose closing the loop to Nike being gutsy as ever. Those are some great lessons from your smiles. Jeff, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So you can follow me on Twitter at JKROHRS, and you can learn more about Yext at YEXT.com. And if you happen to be looking to learn more about digital knowledge management, we have our annual conference at the end of October 23rd, 24th, at Jazz at Lincoln Center in New York City. And tickets are available. You can go to onward18.com. That's O-N-W-A-R-D 18.com.
Awesome. We will link up to all of that in our show notes. Jeff, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Thank you.
And a reminder that On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed on this episode at branddrivendigital.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review. Help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.